Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org.
Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. Got a great show for you today. We've got 2 full hours of Why Aren't You Catholic? If you are not Catholic and you want to have a conversation with us, the number to call is 888-318-7884. That's 888-318-7884. We take questions from anyone who is not Catholic, whether you are one of our Protestant brothers and sisters, whether you are Mormon, Latter-day Saints, atheist, agnostic, Muslim, Buddhist, whatever you want, and any kind of walk of life, if you are not Catholic, we want to hear from you today. 888-318-7884 is the number to call. We know we get non-Catholic listeners, because every time we do a show like this, we get calls. We get calls throughout the show. We know you're out there. We know you're tuning in, or maybe you just stumbled across this show on YouTube or on the radio, or you visited Catholic.com, our website, and you just happen to see the stream pop up. Anyone who is not Catholic who wants to call in, have a discussion with us. We're not going to force you to convert on air. That'd be awesome if it happened, actually. But we're not going to force it, you know. We just want to have a discussion with you. We want to hear the reasons why you're not Catholic and then have a discussion about it. 888-318-7884. If you are a regular listener, you might have noticed by now that I'm not Cy Kellett. He's on the road right now in Oklahoma. He's giving a talk there. So you are stuck with me for these 2 hours. Fortunately, it is not just me. I should say my name. My name is Thomas Graff. I normally run the social media here at Catholic Answers. That's my day job. And sometimes my afternoon job is to fill in for Cy Kellett when he's on the road. So fortunately, you won't have to be stuck with just me, because our guest this hour is the one and only Joe Heschmeyer, staff apologist here at Catholic Answers, owner, proprietor, host of the Shameless Popery podcast, and connoisseur probably at this point of doing these kinds of shows, these Why Aren't You Catholic shows. Is that right, Joe Heschmeyer?
That's maybe a little generous, but I'm striving to do plenty of shows like this. You know, you were talking about people who just kind of stumble upon Catholic Answers. And I've had this happen to me twice, and almost like literally in the past week and a half, where I rent a little office space, or I get, you know, Catholic Answers rents a little office space for me here in Kansas City. And two people in the building have approached me to be like, what is Catholic Answers? And they were both people who had become Catholic. Well, one of them had grew up Catholic and was still mass going, I think. The other one had converted like a year and a half ago, but wanted to know more about the faith. So, yeah, it was a nice kind of inspiring thing to get to explain Catholic Answers, who we are, what we're all about, to people who were very interested and wanted to know more about the faith as Catholics. So whether you're Catholic or not, I hope you'll tune in. And if you are just now tuning into Catholic Answers for the first time and want to know who we are, Thomas already said, we have Catholic.com. We have the mission to explain and defend the Catholic faith. So anything you can think of that would be a way of explaining Catholicism. So podcasts, books, live appearances, showing up on other people's shows, I don't know, a radio show, all of those things to explain and defend the Catholic faith. And so if you've got a question where you think, why in the world do Catholics believe X, Y, Z? And you don't want to insult maybe your Catholic friends, or maybe you don't have Catholic friends, you won't insult us by asking that question. It's right there in the job description. Defending the Catholic faith is something that we do. And so if we never got any questions or challenges, it would be a very boring job. So please don't be offended. Please call in to 888-318-7884. That's 888-31-TRUTH. With your reasons for why you're not Catholic.
That's right, 888-318-7884. I see the lines filling up already, so we do have some of our non-Catholic friends calling in. You know, it's funny you say you've been approached several times now by people asking, what is Catholic Answers? I wear my Catholic Answers gear out all the time, and no one ever just walks up to me and asks. I think maybe the Holy Spirit knows that, like, I'm not the apologist, so don't send them to me. Just send them to Joe. You know, eventually they'll make their way to Joe. Whether through the show or in Kansas City.
I think, you know, everyone should approach Thomas. If you see Thomas out and about, you should approach and ask the most obscure theological questions you can and see what he does.
And I will probably tell you to call into the next day's show. That's probably the answer you'll get. or I'll make something up, and then we'll see. We'll see how that goes. Probably not. 888-318-7884. Joe Heschmeyer, of course, is the author of a number of books that he's published for Catholic Answers, including The Eucharist Is Really Jesus. Hey, you want to talk to us about that one? Maybe you don't believe the Eucharist is really Jesus. We'd love to have that call. Also, The Early Church Was the Catholic Church. Again, if you don't agree with that, you know, we have a lot of assertive book titles that are just propositions, right? So it's very easy to have a discussion about
bottom
that.
Bottom line up front, you know?
Yeah, it's very easy to have a discussion about that if you don't believe that the early church was the Catholic Church. Call in. We'll have it. We'll have a discussion about that. Of course, the one I'm building up to, the book that I'm building up to right now, that is on everyone's mind, is Pope Peter Defending the Church's Most Distinctive Doctrine in a Time of Crisis. I don't know about you, Joe, or anyone else listening. Like, I am still basking in the afterglow of just the amazing outpouring of Catholic joy from last Thursday when we had a new pope. And it's like it seems like every day you wake up, you look at the news, and there's just something else awesome that he said, or some amazing new footage that someone dug up of him 10, 20 years ago. And we're just discovering all these cool things about this man who has suddenly been thrust into like the limelight of the world.
Yeah. I mean, it's no secret. The Catholic Church has been very divided, especially in the U.S. I mean, all over the world, but in a certain way, we can speak to it in the American context particularly. And as we were waiting to see who the new pope was going to be, I think everybody was a little bit nervous, you know, what sort of man was this going to be? Which groups were going to be happy? Which groups were going to be upset? How was this going to make the infighting worse? And I didn't know a lot of people who were just saying, like, I'm super excited for this. A lot of people were kind of waiting with bated breath to see, well, what's going to happen? Because we know who the kind of major figures being talked about were. And I went on Lila Rose's show the day before Pope Leo was elected, and we kind of ran through all the different contenders, and I said, I don't think there's any obvious choice. The only American I could see was Cardinal Prevost, but I said, even then, I don't think it's very likely. I said below 5% chance. So I was very happy to be wrong, partly because he's done this extraordinary job of really uniting the tribes, as it were, of making all these different Catholics who love to fight other Catholics say, hang on, this is a man who seems to be holy, who seems to be prayerful, who seems to be promoting Jesus Christ. And I don't see a lot in there I can quibble with. Now, if you're looking for something to fight about, you can probably find it. But if you're looking to grow in your faith, there is so much richness that already he is sharing. That I share your enthusiasm. I was cautiously optimistic on day one, and I've become more optimistic and just really pleased with everything I've seen so far.
Now, of course, Joe, the question I'm sure on everyone's minds after we and the press and everyone on social media has done all this digging, we found out probably everything there is to know about about Cardinal Robert Prevost, now Leo XIV. We have tried and to get a picture of the man. So now we are down to the absolute most important question you can ask about him. Is the new pope liberal or conservative? That's what we need to know more than anything else, Joe.
I mean, he's both or neither, depending on what you mean by those. Like, he wants to preserve the teaching of the church. He articulates it very clearly, as we've seen already. And he also wants to call us to the radicalness of the gospel. That's consistent with everything the pope has been entrusted to do. So, you know, I'm sure wherever you find yourself on those really not great categories, you'll find something in there to really like about the man, and you'll probably have other things that you feel challenged by him, and I think that's good. Be challenged. I think that's healthy and helpful.
So you're telling me that the strict dichotomy of the 21st century political West does not map neatly onto the personal intuitions of a man leading a 2,000-year-old religious institution. That's the craziest thing I've ever heard, Joe. Come on.
Yeah, you know, actually, I had lunch today with one of the Shameless Popery patrons. He was driving through town, and so we stopped and grabbed lunch. And I was saying, you know, it's not the case that we would say every political party is equally right or every political party is equally faithful to Christ and the gospel or anything. I mean, we don't want to do that. Like, we're not relativists. But on the other hand, we do want to say the idea that one secular political party or movement is going to perfectly capture the gospel when it's not even claiming to is a bit of a stretch. So you're not going to be able to reduce Jesus to one of the two parties or to the two major factions in politics or even to the major factions within the church. There's going to be more going on than the limited human ambitions and ideas and ideals that we squabble about.
Because the goal is the kingdom of heaven, right?
Amen.
That's
right. Not of this world.
Yeah. That's right.
And it's international, too. So, I mean, it's always worth pointing out that even though we now have an American pope, viewing everything through the lens of American politics, like in the same way that I think you would notice how ridiculous this would be if you said, oh, which of the Italian parties is Cardinal Prevost most associated with? You'd say, that, what a weird category. Like, why are you trying to force them into Italian politics? Mm-hmm. I'd just say the same about American politics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd almost be like asking which of the three estates in the French Revolution does he support? That's gone. It's just as irrelevant to ask
right.
about that back then than it is to ask about any particular geographic location right now. Like I said, it's Why Aren't You Catholic Today? 888-318-7884 is the number to call, but the lines are all full. So right after this break, we are going to dive right into questions, your questions, with Joe Heschmeyer. Before we do that, I want to let you know, I mentioned Joe's books, including Pope Peter, the most relevant book of all time at the moment, the best book on the papacy and all things related that you can get, as well as Joe's other books, The Eucharist is Really Jesus, The Early Church Was the Catholic Church. All of these are on sale during our store-wide sale at shop.catholic.com. Everything in our online shop is on sale with dynamite prices store-wide. We got Father's Day coming up, confirmations, graduations coming up. My younger sister was actually just confirmed, so maybe I should go grab a copy right now. I can tell her I know Joe Heschmeyer, and she won't be impressed because she knows that already. But we can, if you want to like say that you know Joe Heschmeyer because you called him on this show and then impress someone with one of his books, you can do that too. It's so easy. Go to shop.catholic.com today. Check out our sale prices store-wide. Grab that copy of Pope Peter. Do whatever you want with it. Read it, give it to someone else, and save some money in the process. Shop.catholic.com. Visit it today. We will be right back for Why Aren't You Catholic? Right here on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
Okay, I've been a Catholic for 5 years, but I suffered under a lot of things due to my Protestantism as a Pentecostal, and I just want to personally ask God to bless you for your ministry, for everything you do, and the help that you give people.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Thomas Graff, social media manager here at Catholic Answers, filling in for Cy Kellett while he is away in Oklahoma, and we are ready to dive into questions about Why Aren't You Catholic? With our very own staff apologist, Joe Heschmeyer, host of Shameless Popery, author of numerous books, including Pope Peter. And Joe, if you are ready, we are going to go right into these questions. What do you
say? Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's first go up the freeway to San Francisco, California. That's a little ways up the freeway, but still is in California. San Francisco, California, where Eric is watching us on YouTube. Eric, hello. Welcome to Catholic Answers Live. Thanks for starting off the show for us.
Hey, guys. I just caught the show. I understand you're asking why I'm not Catholic specifically.
That's correct.
That's right.
Okay, sure. I'm separating personal religious and cultural practice from joining the institution of organized religion. That's where I have an issue. I find that individually, religious people operate ethically and morally because they're applying their human ethics through the filter of their religious culture. But I find when they join religious organizations, that starts to corrupt it. So, for example, I'm fine with individual people with the filter of the religious tenets. But what, like, for example, what the Catholic Church is doing your church still today is still writing governmental policies allowing for these government agencies to work with the Catholic organization to kidnap indigenous children and relocate them into re-education camps. You actively attempt to remove the LGBT people from existence in society by pushing for the psychiatric hospitals to lock them up and chemically castrate them. Your moral teachings remove
consent, stewardship, and empathy. Sorry, real quick, could we get some citations on some of this? Where are we locking people up, or where are you seeing any of this stuff happening?
This is your policies for what you're pushing for. It's not happening in certain areas because civil society pushes back against that.
What areas is it happening in? I'm not aware
every
of any
country
of these,
on this
these
planet
policies.
That you have geopolitical power. You are trying to exterminate the LGBT people from existence in society.
Can you point to a country where that's going on? I mean, maybe like a more Catholic country that. Like I lived in Italy for 3 years, and there was no mass mm-hmm. extermination of the LGBT population.
I understand that because we're pushing back against it. If you had full political power, you guys would lock them up in these hospitals and chemically castrate them. That's your goal. You want them removed from society.
I'm not aware of this goal at all. I think this is completely detached from reality as I see it. I'd love to see some evidence of any of this.
Okay.
Do you have any sources of Catholics saying this is our plan? We want to lock up everybody who you know is
you act
same sex inclined, because the Catechism says the opposite.
Your official policy is declare LGBT as a moral evil, and you're actively right now in the United States trying to you deny them access from adoption, you deny them medical.
Hey, hang on, but that's pretty different than saying you want to lock people up, though. Like saying a child has a right to a mother and a father, and then saying lock up anybody who has same sex attraction. You can see why I can't necessarily draw the line from A to B, though, right?
Yeah, but I would rather have children be with an LGBT family than with any Catholic priest.
Well, you didn't say something about adoption. You said we were locking people or trying to lock people up in psychiatric hospitals.
Yes, you've done that in the past. All the policies.
But you
of
said
the
we okay. So you said the policy of the Catholic Church right now is to lock LGBT people, LGBTQ people up in psychiatric hospitals? Where can I find this policy?
Because
when I read the Catechism, it says
we block them.
When I read the Catechism, it says the opposite of what you're telling me that it says. So I don't know, why should I trust your claims about Catholicism over the actual written statements and practices of the Catholic Church? I mean, I give me something I can point to that would be like evidence.
Okay, I will get those documents and give me your email. I will email you that document.
You can call back. The Catechism in paragraph 2358 says the number of men and women who have deep-seated homosexual tendencies is not negligible. They do not choose their homosexual condition. For most of them, it is a trial. They must be accepted with respect, compassion, and sensitivity. Every sign of unjust discrimination in their regard should be avoided. So by all means, like people are called to chastity. They're called to live in a sexually healthy way. Anyone you meet, basically, who's, you know, has sexual urges, has some sexual urges that they should not act on because they don't glorify God. They're not good for them. This is true of people who are heterosexually inclined, as well as people who have other sexual attractions. Everyone needs sexual discipline. Everyone needs chastity. Everyone needs sexual maturity. That's not the same as saying, let's lock up everybody who has a sexual struggle. I mean, you're not going to find that in any Catholic document I'm aware of. That seems to be in a completely different kind of planet of reality.
I understand. Your official policy, what you're writing there, is about how to treat them compassionately, but your compassion ultimately ends up putting them in mental institutions. That's not compassion. That's
I mean, I would love to see, maybe call back when you have some actual foundation in like a factual basis for it. If you can point to some policy supporting the things that you're claiming, I'd love to engage that.
Eric, thanks so much for starting us off today on this Why Aren't You Catholic show with Joe Heschmeyer. Hope you do call back. We would love to continue that conversation, maybe with a little more grounding so that we can actually get somewhere. Let's move on now to Lucy calling in Charleston, South Carolina. Lucy, go ahead with your question for Joe Heschmeyer. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hey, Joe.
Hi.
I it's an interesting segue, actually, into my situation. The previous caller, which I found that's a little disturbing, because I don't think there's any grounds for saying the mental institution stuff. But my story, and I'm not Catholic. I've many times been in a situation where I thought maybe I would be or should be lifelong Christian. I found myself with a grade five daughter living in Dublin, Ireland, our family was, and she, I got called into school one day, and it was because they found out that my daughter was not Catholic. She's always been Christian, very devoted to God, had already been confirmed in our church. We were Anglican, and they had been going to Mass every Friday. I had no idea, but I guess in Ireland, that's what happens. You don't even know. And she'd been taking communion with the girls, and her teacher asked me, "Are you Catholic?" And I was like, I knew this was loaded. I was like, no. I didn't know why. You know, I just felt like something's going to happen. And she said, and she crossed herself and was like freaking out and said, "Well, Lolly, she's been taking communion. She's been taking Mass." And I said, "When is this? Like, what's going on?" I said, "Well, we walked them down to the church, and she's been taking Mass on Fridays, and she's not Catholic, and oh my God!" And you know, she was just like, it was. So they then forth made my daughter sit at the back of the church while the other girls were at the front and no longer take communion. She was devastated. She was so confused. Yeah. And she said, "Mama, what? I don't understand what's happening here. I know who Jesus is. I love Jesus. I understand mm-hmm. what happened. I understand everything. What is going on?" Just because, like, yeah. "Who is the Pope?" That's what she said. And I said, "Oh gosh, you know, I'm like, what is, I mean, it was really a cultural thing." I was like, "Oh goodness." And I said, and I explained who the Pope was and, mm-hmm. you know, what they believed. And she was, "I just don't understand. How does this relate yeah. to Jesus?" It's like, I said, "Mama," she goes, "Mama, I don't understand. Who do they worship, Jesus or the Pope?" And I'm like, and I said, "Oh my goodness." And so we moved back from Ireland, found ourselves, you know, in my hometown, Charleston, South Carolina. And I was trying to find a school for the year while my husband was overseas. And there was a Catholic school here. And I told her the name, and she goes, "Mama," she goes, "that sounds like a Pope school. Is that a Pope school?" And I was like, and I really like the school, you know? And I said, she goes, "It is, isn't it?" And I said,
yeah. So Lucy, thanks for your call. It sounds like you're, just a little bit distressed with how, your daughter's experience, right? Taking communion and then learning that she wasn't supposed to because she wasn't Catholic. And then you kind of had a follow-up question relating to that, as about like, who do Catholics actually worship, the Pope or Jesus? Did I summarize that right?
I'd like to also add, because it's talking about the previous caller, my daughter is now 31, and she's transgender. And she slowly went away from a very close relationship with God and Jesus. So, and she's totally into that lifestyle. And so that's also to add to that.
Mm. Okay. Yeah. So what is your question about why she couldn't receive communion, or is your question, who do we worship? We worship Jesus, not the Pope. That's the easy one. Do you want to know, like, why non-Catholics can't receive communion ordinarily at Mass?
That's one question. The other question is, I mean, how should I have handled that? And how should they have handled it? And it was damaging to her relationship with Christ, and she's henceforth gone off.
Yeah, I mean, I think that explaining that Christians are divided and that Jesus doesn't want us to be divided would be a good place to start. So I would give a couple Bible verses to an adult. It'd be a different conversation with a fifth grader. But we know that the early Christians handled things the way that you just experienced. St. Justin Martyr in First Apology talks about how he says, and I'm going to quote him here, "This food is called among us Eucharistia, the Eucharist, of which no one is allowed to partake, but the man who believes that the things which we teach are true, and who has been washed with the washing that is for the remission of sins and under regeneration, and who is so living as Christ has enjoined. So to receive the Eucharist in the 100s, you had to be baptized, you had to be living a Christian life, and you had to believe the teachings of the Catholic Church. And that is still what we continue to practice. So then the question becomes, well, why? Two reasons. And you can find these in 1 Corinthians 10 and 11. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 17, says, because there is one, the word there is loaf, arton, we who are many are one body, for we all partake of the one loaf. That when we all receive the Eucharist, we become the body of Christ. That the Eucharistic body of Christ makes the church the body of Christ. And so someone who doesn't want to be part of the body of Christ, doesn't want to be part of the Catholic Church, doesn't want to be in full communion with the rest of the church, can't receive that without a certain kind of contradiction. You're saying one thing with your actions and another thing with your mind and your words. And then the other one is 1 Corinthians 11, where St. Paul warns those who eat and drink unworthily eat and drink damnation upon themselves. So it sounds like they maybe handled it a little rough, but they were, I assure you, trying to look out for the good of you and your daughter. So I apologize if they didn't handle it better than that.
We'll be right back with more Joe Heschmeyer on Catholic Answers Live.
We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world, but it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun, and that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that, but he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs, but you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests, he does on-air debates, and he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to casociety315.com and join today.
Each Catholic is obliged to spread and defend the faith by word and deed. Well, we're here to help. Join special guests Chris Stefanik, Dr. David Anders, Father Jeff Kirby, and all your favorite Catholic Answers apologists this September 25th through 28th in beautiful San Diego for the Catholic Answers Conference. Our theme, Go Make Disciples. Enjoy 4 days of faith, fun, and fellowship. Use promo code EARLY to save $50 when you register today at CatholicAnswersConference.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's Why Aren't You Catholic with Joe Heschmeyer. The number to call is 888-318-7884. If you are a non-Catholic and you want to have a conversation with us, with Joe Heschmeyer, call that number, 888-318-7884. My name is Thomas Graff. I'm filling in for Cy Kellett today until he gets back from his travels in Oklahoma. And if you're a regular listener of this program, it's been a little while since I did that, but normally when Cy is hosting, I will sometimes make an appearance here as Thomas the TikTok Engine. That's the alias that I'm known under when I make those appearances. And as the social media manager, I see a lot of comments that would fit right into a show like this, Why Aren't You Catholic? I see them everywhere in both in our comment sections and just out and about on the internet. So we're doing a little bit of an expanded version. I've decided I'm taking over the show. We're doing an impromptu expanded version of Thomas the TikTok Engine. It's actually Thomas the Twitter Engine. X, if you want to be pedantic about it. It's still a silly name. Elon, change it back. But I've got a post here from X that I sent this to Joe before the show, said, do you want to take this? And normally what I do is I ask these questions, then I make clips out of them and put them back on the internet for everyone to see. So, so Joe, the post I found was from a few days ago when you know the Pope news was really just everywhere. Everyone online, at least on the Christian Twitter space, probably wider, was talking about Pope Leo XIV. Pope Leo, he's here. It's so cool. And some non-Catholic accounts were starting to, I think, get their feathers ruffled a little bit, to the point where one person posted this quote, just this quote from attributed to Martin Luther. When he said, "The Pope is the very Antichrist who has exalted himself above and opposed himself against Christ." What do you make of that, Joe?
That's from the Small Called articles. That is Luther's claim. And it's actually very funny because Luther originally wrote to the Pope promising to obey whatever the Pope decided in the theological controversy Luther found himself enmeshed in. And when the Pope made it clear he was going to side against Luther, Luther then announced the Pope was the Antichrist, which shows you kind of the trustworthiness of Martin Luther. There's several other things where he changes his allegiances as is convenient. As soon as somebody turns against him, he just decides they must be evil and wicked. It's actually, I was reading earlier today, John Calvin lamenting that he did this even to other Protestants. He would just attack them seemingly out of nowhere, and they wouldn't feel comfortable attacking him back because he's like the godfather of the Protestant Reformation. So he was pretty unhinged in his kind of attacks on other people that were often completely unfair. And this is a great example of an attack that is biblically baseless. So what I would encourage you to do, if you want to see if this is true, is don't read Luther, read the Bible and look up the word Antichrist. And you're going to find the word Antichrist appears in only two books, 1 John and 2 John. And John tells us what the term means. So in 1 John chapter 4, verse 2 to 3, he says, "By this you know the Spirit of God. Every spirit which confesses that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is of God. And every spirit which does not confess Jesus is not of God. This is the spirit of Antichrist, of which you heard that it was coming, and now it is in the world already." So if you are a Gnostic and you say Jesus didn't really come in the flesh, you are Antichrist in the biblical sense. Now, does the Pope believe Jesus didn't come in the flesh? Of course not. He boldly proclaims that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh. We offer the flesh and blood of Christ at Mass. It's our Protestant brothers and sisters who often deny that when Jesus says, "This is my body, this is my blood," that it really is his body and blood. That's much closer to what John is warning about than anything the Pope says or does. The Pope happily affirms the bodily nature of the incarnation. Likewise, 2 John chapter 1, verse 7, he says, "Many deceivers have gone out into the world, men who will not acknowledge the coming of Jesus Christ in the flesh. Such a one is the deceiver and the Antichrist." So definitionally, biblically, who is the Antichrist? Someone who denies the bodily incarnation. Does the Pope deny the bodily incarnation? No. Therefore, is the Pope the Antichrist? No. Luther tries to get around this by instead saying, well, the Pope claims to speak on behalf of God, and therefore this makes him the Antichrist. And he uses a misapplication of 2 Thessalonians, where it talks not about the Antichrist, but the son of perdition. And he conflates the lawless one or son of perdition with the Antichrist. And the answer to this is, of course, those sent by God speak on behalf of God. That is literally in the Bible. Jesus sends out the 70, and in Luke 10, verse 16, says, "He who hears you hears me, and he who rejects you rejects me, and he who rejects me rejects him who sent me." So when the Pope says, "I'm announcing the gospel, this is the voice of God, and if you reject this, you're rejecting Jesus and thus the Father," that's just literally Luke 10, 16. And so to say that's the Antichrist is to just directly oppose Christ yourself. Like if you say, "Oh, well, the 70 must be the Antichrist because they're speaking on behalf of God," you've just set yourself up against the incarnate Christ. So Luther is clearly wrong, and there's no biblical way you can get from what the Bible actually says about the Antichrist to believing that the Pope is the Antichrist.
I noticed that online a lot, is people love to throw around big, scary, biblical-sounding words like right. Antichrist, but it turns out words have meanings. So sometimes when you find that out, you discover you misapplied that in a few cases.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a sense in which, especially an idea that's kind of politically incorrect or you feel very bold believing it, people will be so worried about, like, am I allowed to say this, that they won't stop to ask the more fundamental question of, is there any biblical reason to believe that controversial thing in the first place? And in this case, there just is not. For one, like the son of perdition, the man of lawlessness, is a single figure. There have been like 267 popes. Which one are you calling the son of perdition? And the Antichrist is anyone who denies the bodily coming of Christ. It's the Gnostics. It's anyone who believes that Jesus only appeared to be there in the flesh. So it's just like, read the Bible. And I actually, here's a good biblical principle. What happens a lot in Luther's kind of invectives against the church is something we can all easily fall into, which is he's really upset about the Catholic Church. And so anytime he finds the apostles writing about anything, he'll act as if they're writing against Catholicism and they're writing against the Pope and they're writing against situations in the 16th century. And watch out for that. Like if everything you're reading sounds to fit too perfectly to the people you're mad at today in 2025, there's a good chance you're not reading the Bible in its first century context. You're taking the Bible out of context to make it fit whatever you're mad about.
Great. Thanks so much for that impromptu extended version of Thomas the TikTok Engine. We're going to clip that video of you responding and throw it out there for the internet to see later on. It's Why Aren't You Catholic? With Joe Heschmeyer. The number to call is 888-318-7884. And we do have lots of callers who have been waiting patiently. Thank you so much to all of you waiting. We are going to get to your questions right now. We're going to go to Waco, Texas, where Molly is listening to us. Molly, thanks so much for being patient. You're on the air now with Joe Heschmeyer.
Oh, yes, sir. Thank you.
You're welcome. Go right ahead.
I just had a question about purgatory. I was raised non-denominational, and I'm kind of exploring Catholicism. I like listening to the morning show. But I'm curious as to where the concept of purgatory comes from.
Yeah, that's a very good question. And I think we should probably start by saying that the Bible is not always as clear as we would like about the afterlife. And like, go read the Old Testament and try to figure out what the vision of heaven and hell is. And it's surprisingly vague. It's a little less vague in the New Testament, but there are still these times where, you know, people go into Sheol and there's references to Hades and Gehenna and trying to figure out what do all these terms mean? What is going on? You know, when you have Lazarus and the rich man in Luke 16, where are these two guys? So those kind of questions, there are answers to all those things. But if you're just saying from the Bible alone, you're going to get a murky vision of the afterlife. And that includes purgatory. But nevertheless, with that said, I would start with Revelation 21, verse 27, where it says of the city of God, nothing, or the new heavens, new earth, nothing unclean shall enter it, nor anyone who practices abomination or falsehood, but only those who are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. So to enter the presence of God, you need to be without any stain, without any impurity, to stand in the full glory of the presence of God. If you remember Isaiah, when he's even going to have like a vision of God, he's terrified because he's a man of unclean lips. And so he has this fiery purification where the angel dips a charcoal into the fire and purges his uncleanliness. So you have biblically this model that the way that this uncleanliness is purged is presented in this spiritual purification that is expressed in the imagery of fire. Are you with me so far?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, wonderful. So the issue is, as Christians, we still sin. As John says in his letter, like if we say we do not sin, we're liars. And so if you die with uncleanliness in your soul because of sin, and you're still in relationship with Jesus, well, you're not going to go to hell because you're in right relationship with Jesus, but you're not ready yet to stand in the presence of God. And so you need to be purified just as Isaiah was purified with that fiery kind of purification, which is what purgatory means. It is purgatory, like purging, it's a purification. And this is described, I would argue, in 1 Corinthians chapter 3. St. Paul is talking about Christians, and he says in verse 10, according to the commission of God given to me, like a skilled master builder, I laid a foundation, and another man is building upon it. Let each man take care how he builds upon it. For no other foundation can anyone lay than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ. So that's the important framework. He's only talking about Christians here. And then he says in verse 12, now if anyone builds on the foundation with gold, silver, precious stones, so that's the good stuff, wood, hay, stubble, that's the inadequate stuff, Each man's work will become manifest, for the day, that means judgment day, will disclose it, because it will be revealed with fire, and the fire will test what sort of work each one has done. So here you have that biblical imagery of fiery purification again. And then in verse 14, if the work which any man has built on the foundation survives, he will receive a reward. If any man's work is burned up, he will suffer loss, though he himself will be saved, but only as through fire. So Paul is saying amongst Christians, there's two categories of saved Christians. Number one, those who built on the foundation of Christ well, and their work will survive, and they will receive heavenly glory. But then there's this other group that hasn't responded to their call of discipleship very well. They're not damned. They're not going to hell, but they're saved as through fire. They need to be purified in this fiery purgation, just as Isaiah had to have his unclean lips purified so they can stand in the presence of God. Does that make sense, Lucy?
Yeah. Sorry, that's Molly. Molly, does that sound good to you?
Oh, I'm sorry. Molly, my bad.
Okay, that does make sense. So if you have been saved, but say you haven't been to confession, you haven't been given last rites before your death, that doesn't mean that you would go to hell, but it doesn't mean that you would be able to stand fully in the glory of God. You would need to go through a process first. Okay, yes, that does make sense.
And actually, I might add maybe one thing with this as well. In 1 John chapter 5, verse 16 and 17, there's this passage that I find stumps many Protestants, because I've heard many Protestants say, all sin is equally bad in the eyes of God. This is completely absent from the Bible. And that every sin is a death sentence. This is also not just absent from the Bible, it's directly contradicted. In 1 John 5, 16 to 17, we're told, if anyone sees his brother committing what is not a mortal sin, he will ask and God will give him life, for those whose sin is not mortal. There is sin which is mortal. I do not say one is to pray for that. All wrongdoing is sin. But there is sin which is not mortal. So John very clearly, very explicitly says there's these two types of sin. There's mortal sin, that which brings spiritual death. You're cut off from God completely. You are self-damned. And then there's this other kind of sin where it hurts your relationship but hasn't completely ruined it. You're not completely dead. You're wounded, but you're not dead. And this we call venial sin. St. Paul also talks about this. When he's talking about abuses of the Lord's Supper, he warns about those who partake unworthily. And remember, he's writing to people who are physically alive. And he says that because they've received the Eucharist unworthily, this is why many of you are weak and ill, and some have died. So some of them are now in mortal sin, and others have committed venial sins by receiving the Eucharist unworthily. That's just one category where there are these two types of sin. So a Christian could fall into mortal sin. They can have the kind of sin that actually cuts them off from God for eternity unless they're forgiven, unless they go to confession. Or they can have the kind of sin that just is a barrier and it's an obstruction, and they will be saved, but they need to be purified.
Molly, thanks so much for that call. I'm really glad we were able to have that conversation with you. And by the way, there is yet more to learn about the doctrine of purgatory and where it comes from. Our colleague, Dr. Carlo Broussard, now, he wrote a book called Purgatory is for Real, and we would like to send you a free copy. If you hang on the line, Edgar, who screened your call earlier, you just hang on the line, you give him your information, he will arrange for that book to be sent to you free of charge. Purgatory is for Real. So thanks again, Molly, for calling in. It is Why Aren't You Catholic with Joe Heschmeyer today. My name is Thomas Graff. I'm the fill-in host for Cy Kellett. And I have exciting news for all of you. There is another Catholic Answers Cruise coming up right about a year from now, May 2nd to 14th of 2026, a Catholic Answers privately chartered cruise in the Rhineland. Sorry, I'm bringing shame upon myself for my German ancestors for how I pronounce that. But in Germany, a German river cruise. You're going to be able to hang out with Catholic Answers apologists like Joe Heschmeyer. Who else? As well as Cy Kellett, in whose stead I am hosting, Christopher Check, our president, also our good friend Father Sebastian Walsh of the Norbertine Order. This is an all-inclusive cruise. You get all scheduled guided shore excursions. You get, I see here this is called a sip and sail hour with complimentary wine and beer, port fees and gratuities included, unlimited complimentary Wi-Fi access included. You sail with Catholic Answers. Masses said on board. On the ship or in local cathedrals, and confessions heard, dining with Catholic Answers apologists, just hanging out on the river. You will enjoy the cities of, and I'm about to do it again. I'm about to bring shame upon myself from my German ancestors. You will enjoy the cities of Düsseldorf, Cologne, that one's easy, Landstein, Wasserbillig, I believe that's how those are pronounced, along with others that I will read later in the show if you want to hear me embarrass myself again. But if you want to go on this cruise, catholic.com/cruise. I should have read that URL way earlier. catholic.com/cruise. Very simple way to find out how you can get in on this cruise next year, May 2nd to 14th of 2026. catholic.com/cruise. We will be right back with more Why Aren't You Catholic with Joe Heschmeyer right after this.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
The Catechism defines evangelization as the proclamation of Christ and his gospel by word and the testimony of life. But what does that look like in real life? It looks like St. Paul street evangelists out in the public square sharing the good news. We're a Catholic nonprofit that starts conversations by handing out free sacramentals. Then we employ our method of listen, befriend, proclaim, and invite. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
EWTN uses the power of radio to reach people whenever and wherever they're searching for answers to questions about their Catholic faith. EWTN Radio is heard on over 500 domestic and international AM and FM radio affiliates. For a complete list of programs and how to hear EWTN Radio, visit EWTN.com and click Radio. EWTN, the Global Catholic Network.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's Why Aren't You Catholic today with our staff apologist, Joe Heschmeyer. 888-318-7884 is the number to call. The lines are all full, though, so keep calling. As we get through calls, people will drop off the lines and you'll be able to slip in before someone else. Joe, are you ready to go back to calls?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. Let's go to Meridian, Idaho, where Matthew is tuning in on YouTube. Matthew, you are next up with Joe Heschmeyer. Go ahead with your question.
Hey there, guys. Thank you for all that you do. I happen also to be a regular listener to Shameless Popery, so that's pretty good too.
Very nice.
So
I had to make sure you weren't my brother-in-law. I've got a brother-in-law named Matthew who lives in Meridian, Idaho. So.
All right, you're on notice now, Matthew. So, okay. All right.
Yeah. Go ahead, though.
All right.
Tell us Joe's darkest secrets.
All right. Yeah. So. I'm kind of a one foot in the door into the Catholic Church and one foot out. So I've been hung up about this really specific question when I bring up apostolic succession. It's usually when I'm in a conversation with a non-denominational friend, although he has like mixed views that are like Calvinist and Baptist, and it's really confusing on what he believes in. But like anytime I mention this, he always uses the apostleship requirements that are, I think it's listed somewhere in like Acts.
And it's Acts 1, kind of 22 to 23, if I'm following you correctly. Yeah.
Yes. And he sees it as a kind of universally binding requirement for the clergy. And I just can't get past it because like anytime I bring it up, it just rolls off the tongue like a rehearsed argument. And it's like, I can't answer this. So how do you approach like this whole like apostleship thing that's like...
Okay, I'm going to give a little bit of context for people who may not be familiar with what you're talking about. And you also tell me if I'm getting your question right. In Acts chapter 1, when St. Peter is looking to replace Judas with Matthias, whose feast day is today, by the way, he specifies that the requirements they're looking for, it has to be one of the men who have accompanied us during all the time that the Lord Jesus went in and out among us, beginning from the baptism of John until the day when he was taken up from us. One of these men must become with us a witness to his resurrection. So the argument goes, well, subsequent generations can't meet that. Is that right?
Yes. And
yeah,
this also...
St. Paul also couldn't meet that.
Yes.
So I would ask him if Paul is wrong to describe himself as an apostle. Because what Peter is referring to there is a one-time thing in relation to the 12. And I want to be very clear. Apostolic succession doesn't mean that the Pope is an apostle. We don't have like a quorum of 12 apostles like the Mormons do. We believe these are the successors to the apostles. In the same way that you are, you know, the descendant of your great-grandfather. That doesn't mean you are your great-grandfather. That the apostles set something in motion and give instructions for it to be continued on. And we can see this biblically very clearly. So take St. Paul in 2 Timothy chapter 2. He says to Timothy, "You then, my son, be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus, and what you have heard from me before many witnesses, entrust to faithful men who will be able to teach others also." Now, there's an important dimension there. Teaching in the biblical sense requires office. It requires being sent. And St. Paul very strongly believes and teaches this. He actually says in Romans 10, verse 15, how can men preach unless they are sent? And so when he says teaching, he's talking about an official teaching doctrine, not just like you're reading the Bible to your kids or something like this. James chapter 3 talks about this as well. James says, "Let not many of you become teachers, my brethren, for you know that we who teach shall be governed with greater strictness." So it's referring to the leading of the church. And so in this context, Paul has just pointed us to three generations. He's pointed us to himself, the next generation in Timothy, and the generation after that, who Timothy is entrusted to pass this along to. And so right there, you have everything you need for apostolic succession, that anyone who comes along claiming to teach in the name of Christ and his church needs to be able to say who they were sent by, who was themselves authorized to teach in the name of Christ and his church. And we see this as far back as the time of the apostles. The other way you can see this is in Acts chapter 15, when some men come down without authorization teaching heresy. And they're called out not only for teaching heresy, but also for going out without being sent. And so if you read in Acts 15, I would just look up the word sent or send. It appears 11 times in that chapter. And let's see. They send in the letter to the Gentile believers. They say, "Since we have heard that some persons from us have troubled you with words, unsettling your minds, although we gave them no instructions, it has seemed good to us in assembly to choose men and send them to you with our beloved Barnabas and Paul." So you'll notice the local church isn't just choosing its own leadership. This is being organized, in this case, at the Council of Jerusalem, and men are sent out with authority, and they're rebuking those who are going out proclaiming what they understand the Bible to mean without authority.
Matthew, how does that sound to you?
That sounds excellent. I just have one little more point to make. Even when I also point out various second century writings, such as the Didache, that also...
Against Heresies, like, Book 3, Chapter 3, traces every pope down to Eleutherius, the 13th pope. And this is in 180. It's older than the word Trinity. But go ahead. Sorry.
I mean, that's a pretty good point. What he concludes and what his argument against apostolic succession is that, like, kind of like the whole, like, great apostasy argument, like, kind of, like, falls in line, and that everyone after is, like, there was no second generation. Everyone kind of just, like, did their own thing, and they're kind of, like a loose democratic association of Christians, which doesn't make any sense.
I would say two things. I know we're coming up against the bottom of the hour, so I'm going to say two things quickly here. Number one, why would Jesus go to so much trouble building his church? Look at Matthew 16, "I will build my church." Look at the way he builds it and what it looks like and how hierarchical it is. People don't choose their leaders, they're chosen for them. Even when they choose the deacons, they don't just automatically become deacons. They need to have hands laid on them by the apostles. So you have this very top-down leadership structure that looks much like the Old Testament in the New Testament. And all that so we can have something like a Western-style, you know, People's Republic of God? No, it's a kingdom, and it's structured like a kingdom and not like a democracy, not like a congregation in the Protestant sense. Because that's the biblical model. So if you say, this is my second point, if you say the second generation didn't get this message, then you have to believe that the apostles failed and that 2 Timothy 2 is not telling the truth when it describes Timothy having this commission to entrust the gospel to faithful men to pass it on to the next generation.
Matthew, thank you so much for that call. Hope we were able to help you out. Please do call again whenever you can. That brings us to the end of our first hour of Why Aren't You Catholic with Joe Heschmeyer? But guess what? I said it's the first hour. That means there's a second. So if you are on the line, hang on the line. Thank you so much for being patient. Promise we are going to get to your calls in the next hour. And anyone else who wants to call, the number is 888-318-7884. If you are not Catholic and you want to call in and have a discussion with Joe Heschmeyer, we would welcome it. 888-318-7884. We will begin that second hour right after this.